at the 2015 exam, and you are going to score, aren't you? Talk to me. I hate windows. Internationalization. Here we go. The following statement is good C that you might find in a well-tested program. Now, I say something like that because from time to time I've said, you know, here is some good C, what is wrong with this C? And find students in the exam reporting entirely non-existent errors in the C code, qua C code. Whereas, of course, the clue is the word internationalization. And so here we've got somebody trying to print a date, and we've got some English words here. We've got the hour, the minute, and the AM or PM, and the day, the month, and the year. Some people apparently think that taking a string and adding a number to it isn't legal in C. But it is. The number is an offset. And of course, this is a perfectly good piece of code, and that's it. I have to say this. I wish I didn't have to say this. This statement has two problems. Neither of them is a syntax error or a type error. This is good C. And people will still insist on trying to see a problem in the C code as C code. It's an internationalization problem, and there are two issues here. One of them is that it assumes particular formats for the dates, for the date and time. And this date and this format isn't even universal within English-speaking countries. The other is that there's a bit of natural language text in there. And if you're trying to, if a Chinese person is trying to use this program, they don't want to see English words, they want to see Chinese words. They want to see whatever the Chinese phrase for this is. Okay. So how do you fix them? The entire answer that I'm looking for in that is use library functions to convert the date and time to a string and use a message catalog to wrap the right words, to find a string that wraps the right words around that number, that whatever it is. Okay. So it was really meant to be a very simple question, but this is typical of the kind of thing you have to do. You have to go through and you have to say, well, where have I got stuff that's got words? And there have actually been tools written to try and make it easy for people to rip the strings out of a C program. But the fundamental thing is there are actually two reasons why we have strings in printf or printf-like functions. One reason is that we're constructing text to be given to human beings. And that needs to be adapted. The other reason is that we're constructing text to be given to a computer. And that must not be adapted. Okay. So it's really, really important when you're writing a program to say, well, what am I formatting for putting in a log file or sending down a wire to another program? And what is meant for display to human beings? Okay. So I thought I would remind you that this kind of stuff does actually turn up in the exams. One thing, it's not, there's variation between languages, okay? It's not just that the words are different, the words may be in a different order, and it's not just that. One of the classic things is printing the number of errors you've seen. So you've got zero errors, one error, two errors. And you say, okay, my problem here is that I've got to either add an S or not. Well, no, because other languages do not mark plurals by adding the letter S. And indeed, English doesn't always do that. You know the word bow, B-E-A-U? The plural of bow is bows, B-E-A-U-X. Because it's not actually an English word. It's one of the marks of education is being able to apply the correct pluralization rules for the language you've borrowed the word from. But it gets more strange than that. Let's see if we can do this. Now, I'm hoping for a table here. That's good. Did you notice this? Does everybody here know a little bit about Maori? Okay.
English has singular and plural. And Maori has three numbers, singular, dual, and plural. In fact, the Maori pronoun structure has exactly the pronoun system, has the same structure as the Neo-Melanesian or Talk Pidgin structure. And not only that, but Maori and Pidgin distinguish between inclusive and exclusive. And that's not really clearly explained there. This is one of the problems I remember vividly from being a child. And my parents said, we are going to town. I didn't know whether they meant first person inclusive, was I going with them, or first person exclusive, was I staying home. And, you know, when I found that Maori did this, I thought, brilliant, why don't we do that? Now, this thing about having more than one number is common in a lot of languages. The pronoun system is actually the last place it disappears from. Ancient Greek had a dual number. Old English had a dual number surviving in the pronoun system. But other languages have a dual number that's still active. Okay, so you want to say this thing for zero, this thing for one, this thing for two, this thing for more. And then it gets really weird where some languages have what's called a porcal number, which corresponds to our idea of a few. So a simple little thing like saying there were this many of these things, it can get very complicated. Myself, I decided to fudge it by instead of saying n errors, to say number of errors colon n. But this is the kind of thing that, I mean, I could go through language after language showing you that singular and plural is not universal. And when it is, so we, one thing we might need to do is in our message catalogue, our thing that holds strings or whatever, we might have need to have little miniature programs to decide what to print. And the message catalogue system doesn't care what's in the string. The GNU GetText system, GetText is the GNU version of the message catalog approach, and one of the things they have is we don't really have time, but the documentation is there. One of the things they have is a function for taking a message and plugging in a number, and they try to cope with plurals, but no, it just does not work. You really need to be a little bit creative about that. Okay, www.cs. And where are we? It's... Ah, dear. Can I do this? This is taking me back. Sorry, the lectures are up there, but the link isn't. I'm going to have to do something about that. So let's go to this one. Dates and times. So numbers and sums of money. Oh, yes.
In one of the things that you learnt very quickly back in the old days was that different countries mark decimal points differently. And one of the reasons you learned it was that in Kabul, there was an actual declaration, decimal point is comma, which basically dealt with this. Now this is important when you're writing C, because, like I said, there are two reasons for writing out numbers, or dates, or times, or pretty much anything. One of them is to show to people. And if you're showing numbers to people, you want to show the numbers in a way that they can read. If you're showing numbers to a program, you want to show the numbers in the way the program can read. So you do want to customize numbers according to the current local culture when they're for people. And you don't want to do this when they're for other programs. And it's an interesting thing. Most programming languages have some sort of function for reading, for converting strings to numbers, and that function will follow the rules of the programming language, which means that a simple little thing like reading floating point numbers, when it's been written by some other language, you might have to actually muck around with the string a bit before you do the conversion. There is, in fact, no completely universally agreed format for floating point numbers in programming languages. There are programming languages where the E can be in either case. There are programming languages where it must be lowercase. Programming languages where it must be uppercase. Programming languages where it could be S, L, D, Q, etc. In addition... there was one programming language I loved a whole lot where the exponent sign was an at sign, not even a letter. Then there's the question about are you allowed to have some sort of separator between the digits? Like in English, we have the comma between blocks of three digits. Some languages let you have spaces. The language that I've implemented lets you have back quotes because they sort of look like a comma, but they're not. The really, stupid one, the one that's really annoying, is are you allowed to begin a number with a decimal point? Can you say 0.5 or must it be 0.5? And the fact that some languages let that happen and some don't is really quite annoying. Oh dear, we do make life difficult for ourselves. This is one thing to be aware of, okay? If you're exchanging numeric information between programming languages, make sure that what you can easily generate is something that the other language can easily read.
Now, one interesting thing is that this whole business of putting the commas to separate blocks of digits, different languages do that differently. So there are some European languages, I think, used in South America, where you begin with a comma for the thousands, and then you have an apostrophe for the millions. And then it goes a comma again, then it goes apostrophe again. All right. Then you come across India. Now, there's more than 1,000 million people living in India, and quite a lot of them have mobile phones. This is an interesting market, right? Yes, well, we could do blocks of three. They don't. The blocks that they use are not the same size as each other. Okay. So then you've got the question about how do you write negative numbers? Do you do it by changing the color? Do you put a sign at the front? Do you put parentheses? There's an accounting convention still used of indicating negative numbers by putting parentheses around a number. I've got no idea where that came from. And of course, when you've got money as well, money is quite tricky. One of the ways it's tricky is that there are cultures where the digits used for counting things and the digits used for money are different. Do you have a symbol? I was looking at a particular conference, and unfortunately the problem with symbols is that they are not terribly unique. I was looking at this particular conference, and the accommodation was $598 per night for a single room. I thought, I'm in New Zealand. Why is this telling me price in Australian dollars? And by the way, that's a scary price. This must be a palace. Actually, it was equivalent of about $45 a night because it was Argentinian pesos, not Australian dollars. Okay, so what do we do about this? Well, one of the things is there are these international currency codes. So we've got things like NZD for New Zealand dollar, AUD for Australian dollar, USD for American dollar, CDD, I think it is, or is it CND, for Canadian dollar, and so on. It used to be GBP for, oh, I've got it down there, euros, Swedish krona, and so on. The thing about these three-letter codes is that they are managed by an international committee, and they are unique. You cannot confuse them. If you want to send, this is even a subdivision of culture, if you've got somebody who's dealing with multiple currencies, they will appreciate seeing each sum of money labelled with the international code for the kind of currency that it is. They will understand what these codes, they'll understand the significance, they'll be expecting to see them. If you're showing prices to somebody on the web, chances are it's an ordinary consumer, they want to see prices in their currency written the way their currency is conventionally written. So if you're showing prices to New Zealanders, you probably want to say dollars X.YZ. But if you're quoting prices in several currencies, you probably want the NZD thing. And there are more variations in the way that money can be written than you could possibly shake a stick at. And in C, there is a function called STRFMON, String Format Money. And Strifmon is your friend. Do not ever print money by hand. Let somebody else do the work. Now, there is, you can do it yourself. When C was standardized in 1989, C was the first language to have a standard which gave you access to locale-specific information. And locale.conf used the manual to find this, and it gives you back what is the decimal point for money, what is the fractional digits, how many fractional digits in money, how many, what's the thousand separators, if it's written for, in an international format, how many fractional digits, what's the currency code, that's a three-digit thing, currency symbol, but then for ordinary numbers, we've got the decimal point, the thousand separators, which is actually a string with multiple characters. What do you write for positive sign, what do you write for the negative sign, does the positive sign precede or follow the number, does the negative... Now, C, even C99 didn't include any number, any functions that were built in for formatting this, except that in printf, you can ask for numbers to be printed, that were there, numbers to be money. Strifbomb is now in POSIX. This is an old sign. But again, this is a question about what digits are you using, and localconf does not give you this information. So C gave us more locale-specific information than we'd ever had before, but not quite enough. But when they standardized C, they were thinking in terms of 8-bit characters, so there was no choice of digits. Okay. So we've got differences between languages, but and even between dialects. The most obvious difference between English and American is the spelling, where the story goes that Noah Webster hated Samuel Johnson, so deliberately changed the spelling of American to make it not be the same as English spelling. But he didn't. He wasn't actually a linguist, so he didn't actually come up with intelligible rules for the changes, which is why Americans think English spelling is so hard, American spelling is so hard, and English speakers don't see quite the same problem. What I call a stove, some English speakers call a cooker, that might be English. What I call a batch, people in the South Island, I was told, call a crib, and Australians might call a weekender. What I was thinking of as a child's hut might be called a cubby. The things I wear when I go into a swimming pool, I was raised to call them togs. Other people call them swimming trunks or swim shorts. If you buy baked beans, do they arrive in a tin or in a can? Okay. These are differences between dialects, and they can be rather irritating. They can occasionally lead to confusion. Some languages have particular issues. For example, when a language changes its rules about spelling, in Norwegian, they've got riksmål and bokmål, or bokmål rather. When Yugoslavia was still a country, there were two different conventions for writing it in in Latin letters. So, what do we do about that? Well, we've got an even bigger problem, of course, which is that there are different languages, not just different dialects. But we've got two levels here. We've got languages and dialects. And it's a real pain that this thing was set up in Windows. There is a naming system for locales. It's not universally adopted, but it is fairly widely adopted. And it starts with language, then it's got the country, and then it's got the character set that you're using. And of course, country isn't quite the right level of detail. But, you know, Maori in New Zealand and Maori in the Cook Islands, they're pretty much mutually intelligible, but they are different. English, ENNZ versus ENUS. They are not the same thing. Now, one of the issues here is when we want to convey some information to a human being in words, how do we do that? Now, there was a lot of work in the artificial intelligence community. Chris Marish's work that I'm familiar with, and Arnie Ranta, and our own Alastair Knott worked on a system called ILEX. And the idea of these systems is you give them some sort of description of a state of affairs, and they generate English or whatever from that. And that's pretty cool, and they can do a pretty good job. And they can, it's really, really good, but it's difficult to set up. Okay. So, what do? We try to classify the things that a program needs to say to somebody into a finite set. Now, the thing about the natural language generation approach is that it can handle a potentially infinite range of things to say. It can not only generate the cat chase the dog, but it can say the cat and the dog chase the aardvark, which is really quite implausible, but you never know. There's an unbounded number of things that those things can say. But for ordinary use, we have a finite number of strings, possibly with placeholders for numbers, or dates, or times, or amounts of money. And we say, okay, this is all we can say. And we put those in a file. And in your program, instead of saying print hello world, you put something that says print the message known as hello world. And the program then goes out to a file and finds that message and prints what it finds there. And that file is what I'm calling a message catalog, largely because that is in fact the POSIX name for it. And basically all it really is a mapping from some sort of message identifier to a string, and whatever that string is, that's up to you. Unix has two message catalog interfaces that work with different files. One of them comes from System 5, and it's MessageCat, MSGCAT, and one of them comes from the GNU project, and that's GetText. So let's see if we can find something. What I'm actually after is the link here. See also, oh, that's really helpful. Whoops. This is the message catalog interface. They've all got cat in the name, and so cat opens a message catalog, and cat closes it. Surprise, surprise. And there are rules about how to find these things, which we don't have time to go through. But an important thing here is that part of those rules, how does your program know? The whole point of a message catalog interface is to have multiple files, files for different languages. So how does it know which one to use? Well, there's a bunch of Unix environment variables that begin with LC underscore. They exist in order to support localization. It stands for locale. A locale is basically a bunch of information about things, the values to use for things that might vary according to culture. So you can use this to say which version of the file you want. And if this were Unix, I could demonstrate this, but it's not. And please tell me that there's... See, also cat get s. This is the crucial thing that we're after, which says... This is a catalog I want you to look in. These two numbers tell you which message I want. And this is the default to use if they're not defined, if that's not defined in there. Okay. So we're looking up an identifier in a database with a default, and the identifier is a pair of numbers and what idiot thought numbers would be a good idea? Let's take a look at the Get Text manual page. For Get Text, they did something brilliant. Simple but brilliant. They said, why don't we take the default message as the key? So here we go. Here is the message identifier that we want. And so you set up the interface, you establish your catalog in a different way, but GetText simply says, look this thing up, and if you can't find it, use that default message as the answer. This argument is both the default answer and the key to look things up in the database, and that's brilliant. One of the reasons it's brilliant is when you're doing a translation of a message catalog, the message catalog consists of pairs of strings. The original text that you're going to use by default and the translation. So when you're trying to maintain this, with the old interface, you just have the list of translations. And if you get things in the wrong order for some reason, it's going to go crazy. But with the GetText interface, you've got, here is the text that's going to be used by default, and here is the translation in this language. First of all, as long as those two lines stay together, you're not going to get confused. But best of all, you can look at that and you can say, is this the correct translation of that? You don't just know what the translation is, you know what it's a translation of. Why am I laboring this point? Because this is a software engineering paper, and part of the issue in software engineering, we've got problems to solve, but how do we solve them? And it seems to me that the GetText interface here, where you have the default as the key, has so many advantages, and it's an approach I want. Now, I wasn't smart enough to think of this. Okay, in my own text editor, I independently developed the idea of a message catalog. Well, one reason for that was I wanted to get the strings out of my program because it had to fit into 64 kilobytes. So putting all the error messages and things out in another file was a big help. But at least in that, I gave each message a name and automatically generated a header, but I wasn't brilliant enough to think that the text could itself be the key. So what we've got here with the getText approach is the format of the data. Now, it's not the data that's actually used at runtime. There is a program that takes a catalog in human processable form and turns it into a thing called a .po file, which is used at runtime because you want to look things up efficiently. But it's just so much more maintainable. Really, really brilliant. I am so impressed by that. It's brilliantly simple. And this is one of the things you should always be thinking about is saying, is there a way that I could structure my data files or my code or whatever to make it more maintainable? Because everything that's worth having is going to be maintained. Now, the strings here could be translated text, or you could be translating things for a different version of the operating system. So these things could be file names, or as I said about printing numbers with text, they could be miniature programs to say how to print things. And one issue that people found when they started adapting programs to other languages was that text is different sizes. Okay. One thing I used to amuse myself by doing, I'd be in a train on the European continent and there would be a message, things like do not spit out of the windows or whatever. And I'd amuse myself by counting the syllables in the different languages. And English came out shortest. Yay, English! Every time. But that's actually good news for us, but it's bad news because it means that if we carefully design a user interface and we place things beautifully, when our interface gets translated to another language, the text is likely to get bigger. Now, in all honesty, this is half a joke, right? It's not that English is best. The English best. I wouldn't give tuppence for all the rest, flavors and so on. No, it's simply the fact that when you write a text and you translate it into another language, a translation always tends to be longer because they're trying to capture the nuances of the original and you just wouldn't have said it that way. Okay, so translation itself tends to make text bigger. So what do you do? Well, that means that you've got to make aspects of the layout of your user interface. They have to be customizable as well. Now, Macintosh has this thing called resource forks, and there was a program called ResEdit. Resource forks still exist. I'm not quite clear why, but nonetheless, here's some of the things that you can have in a resource fork. These days it would be an interface builder file, but it's the same idea. Strings, icons, what keyboard you're expecting might be that into different keyboards. Window layout, comparison methods, date and time formats, all that kind of stuff. Keyboard layouts. Last week I installed the latest stable version of Ubuntu in VirtualBox on my desktop machine, and it wanted me to say what kind of keyboard I had. And that was a bit of a pain because what I wanted to say was I've got a Macintosh US keyboard, but it didn't offer me that as an alternative. When I So when I press the back quote, I get a hash sign. When I press ordinary quote, I get an at sign. It makes using the shell extraordinarily difficult. I'm going to have to reinstall it and try again, which will make the third time. But one of the things that I would like to demonstrate, but I can't because this is not in the not in the Macintosh environment. On a Macintosh, you've got up on your main menu, over here, there's a thing about the keyboard. And you can actually have several virtual keyboards installed. So my desktop machine, I can flick between the US keyboard, the Greek keyboard, and the Maori keyboard. So if I want to get an A with a Macron, like in Otago or Maori, it's just flick up there, select Maori keyboard, select back. I've had some very puzzling experiences where I finally realised that my problem was that I'd stuck in the Maori keyboard. The original Macintoshes were intended as single-user machines, like the original DOS boxes. And so it wasn't a problem that macOS had, here is your program and here is the resource fork. Unix was intended as a multi-user system, so the Unix localization thing has always been by separate files and directories. Always been the idea that different users using the same program would see different adapted versions of that program, which is why it's important that the mutable stuff should be out of the program. It's got to be in different files so that different users can use different files. Windows can have attributes on files. But Windows resources, they let you have multiple catalogs within a single file. Java uses things that are called resource bundles, and they're basically the same idea as a message catalog. Okay. So what are the general themes here? And we're running close to the end of the lecture, which is good because this is close to the end of the slides. The first thing here is to have some idea of what can vary. And this is really the three kind of phases. Globalization, now there are notes for this, and I'll be making sure that the links point to these notes. Globalization is when, before you start writing the program, you consider issues about selling into a global market. And you go out and you find what you might need to deal with. Internationalization is when you build the program or adapt the program so that it can be changed. So this is where, just very quickly, let's go here and local and your page LC. The Unix interface, come on, talk to me. Has these issues. So, character type. So, here we see a locale name with the language, the territory, and the character set. So, what is the character type? How are numbers dealt with, what's the decimal point of all that kind of stuff goes in here. Dates and times, what are their formats? Collate, this is actually much more than a standard, this is Linux.
Monetary says what money looks like. Life is about comparison, and is normally sort of picked up off that. Messages said what languages, what language should I write messages in? Paper is a really nice thing, which is a... Unfortunately, it's not standard across Unixes. But, in America, they've got this universal... what do they call it? Business letter size paper. In everywhere else in the world, it's A4. Actually, when I was growing up, we had two standard sizes. Oh, actually, the Americans have business and a letter and legal, and they're not the same. We had foolscap and quarto. So, I don't know how that works. I don't know how these things work. But mention it is pretty much obviously about how do we report lengths and weights. Do we report things in kilograms or in pounds? Okay. Now, all of these things can vary. So here's your first step of localization. All of these things can vary. Not all of these things are standard. Okay. So know what can vary. And you've even got, you've got attitudes about will your customers like it if there is a picture of a woman in a bikini with a happy smile? Or will they say, death to the kaffir? Okay. Work through libraries, ideally libraries that come standard with your language. So one of the things you need to find out is how does my programming language deal with locales? And fortunately, this word locale is fairly standard. So you're using some programming language. Look up in the index and the table of contents. What does it say about locales? Literal strings are places where assumptions about the locale may be lurking. The order of the things in text can change. The size of the text can change. And it really, really helps if you have the final round of polishing the translations done by a native speaker. You want stuff that looks good. And that next week, unfortunately, doesn't apply to this week, so there we go. Porting between cultures is a lot like porting between operating systems. It's a pain, but if you don't want to